Testing, testing, 1, 2, 3. This is my voice under the blanket. How does it sound now?
Hi everybody, Paul here. Want to talk to you today about something that I came up with and was thinking about as I've spent a lot of years, I would say, researching and listening to all sorts of discussion and arguments about belief in God, why people do, why people don't, and other kind of arguments as well. And what I want to talk about is specifically three arguments that people use to dissuade you from a position that I think are a lot of times arguments that are not used very well, and that if you learn to identify them, you can still listen to them, but it kind of gives you a little bit of a frame to understand, okay, this is an argument that can often be made against something or against a belief in something that doesn't necessarily have to have all the weight in the world, that it's something that you can kind of keep in container. So three things. The first one is reduction to absurdity. So this is what I'm just calling it, reduction to absurdity. You can do this with a lot of things, and it's essentially just breaking something down into its component or constituent elements and then saying, so you're saying that just these little constituent elements means this? And so I'll try to give some examples. So let's take the action of kissing. If you take the action of kissing, we know what that kind of represents in our culture and in many cultures, a bond of love or growing love or commitment or excitement, all those things kind of mixed together. But it's very easy to sort of reduce it to absurdity by just saying, so you're saying that if one person smashes their lips, these fleshy protuberances on the front of their face against someone else's, and exchanges saliva with him, that means that you are now in love? So you see how I just broke it down into the physical elements of what a kiss is, and then said to jump from that to love is ridiculous. And it's pretty convincing if you do that, but you can do it with anything. If you do a handshake, just for another physical gesture, you can do this with lots of things. I'm just using physical gestures as the examples. If you extend your hand in front of your waist and someone else extends their right hand in front of their waist, and then you interweave your hands together and lightly press them together, that means you're now forming at least a slight bond of connection or friendship. That's how it happens. So if you're an alien, you know, you could ask that question and be forgiven for wondering what the big deal is. And so it makes the handshake seem ridiculous. Of course, if you think of it that way, then it kind of does seem ridiculous. But there are other ways to think about it, which is if you're trying to build a connection with somebody, then to do something that includes some light physical touch but isn't like an all-out embrace, you think about the history of people doing things like waving or saluting or anything like that. A lot of it had to do with showing that your hands aren't armed with a weapon that you're going to savage them in a moment. And so there's that element of just the open gesture kind of communicates to our bodies that the other person is a relatively safe person to be around, at least at the moment. And so the handshake serves these purposes. You don't have to think about it for it to work. It's something that coheres with the reality that it represents. It doesn't have to do it perfectly either. You could make the same kind of argument with a kiss. You can argue about, well, just the natural inclination that our bodies have, that's something that's pleasurable to people, that it's related to a sense of intimacy and closeness, and our lips are, you know, have all kind of nerve endings in them, so there's that. Anyway, the point is you can make counter-arguments, but when you first hear the reduction to absurdity of breaking something down into its components and then saying, so you're saying this means this, then it seems like an overwhelming and powerful argument. And so people use this, of course, when it comes to belief in God and religious things as well. they just break something down, you know, say the scriptures and say, oh, so some guys wrote some words on paper and suddenly that's from God. You know, it's just, it's a naive, simple argument, but it can be very effective if you don't know what it is. It just seems very overpowering. So reduction to absurdity is number one. Number two is, I'm going to call this the flying spaghetti monster argument. And you may have heard this before, but people that don't have any belief and that like to make the point of why they don't believe or try to convince others not to believe in God, they will say something like, well, you don't believe in the Norse gods of Thor and Odin, and you don't believe in some of the Hindu gods of Vishnu and Shiva and all these people. And so I'm just like you. There's just one more God that I don't believe in, and that is the God of the Bible. And there's different variations of this argument. This is one of the variations. And so it's a way of saying, hey, you guys don't all agree with each other. And sometimes this argument is made more directly and explicitly. You guys don't all agree with each other, and you don't have your stuff together and see eye to eye. So why should I believe in your God when you can't even agree amongst each other? And so the apex of this argument is the flying spaghetti monster. And they say, do you believe in the flying spaghetti monster? It's just this, you know, God that is like a flying spaghetti monster. And you don't? Why? Because there's no evidence? Oh, well, that's the same reason I don't believe in God of Christianity or Judaism or the scriptures or whatever. It's the same thing. It's the exact same thing. So that's an argument that gets leveled sometimes. These are all variations on the same theme. And so, of course, what that fails to take into account is people don't all have to agree with each other on something for there to be substance behind that something. And so it's really a kind of, I get the argument, but it's limited in its power. It's another one that seems very powerful until you really think about it a little more. So, I mean, one example of this would just be science. Science has proven obviously very, very effective at many things and has a lot of power. And many people would agree, a lot of accuracy. But do all scientists agree on their scientific theories? Absolutely not. You know, and obviously there are many people who have disagreed over the centuries. People in the past disagree with scientists now. And that doesn't call into question the study of science or that science as a field is a worthy pursuit or can help guide towards truth. It can do all of those things, regardless of how much disagreement there is. The level and amount of disagreement is not a good argument that something isn't a useful pursuit or contain truth within it. And so there can be as much disagreement within people who believe in something in the spiritual realm as there needs to be and as there is and as there could possibly be. And it does not call into question the reality, the potential reality of the spiritual realm. It doesn't prove there is. It just doesn't prove there isn't, if that makes sense. It's just not a good argument against, really, when you think about it. And so, in fact, in that flying spaghetti monster example, what goes on in my head when I hear that sometimes is, okay, you've drawn the line. You've decided where to draw the line. And you've put yourself on this side along with me because I don't believe in Thor and Odin, and along with this guy because he doesn't believe in Shiva and Vishnu. You've drawn the category line right there. And that's a choice that you can make, but it arguably makes more sense to draw the category line in a completely different place in this argument, which is there are many, many people, in fact, the vast majority of humanity from all of history, including now, who believe there is something other than just the material reality that we see that is real and has an effect on the real world and the material world. Now, yes, there's all kind of disagreement, but it's not a bad argument to say the people who believe there is something share a belief in common, as much disagreement as there might be about the nature of that reality. They share something in common And there's a bigger gap between that and believing there cannot and is not and shall never be any kind of reality that is not material reality. And the people who say there is such a reality, that's a bigger gap. So I think it's a little bit of a trick. I get it. It has a certain amount of effectiveness. But I think it's a little bit of a trick to say, I'm just like you, and I don't believe in all these other million gods. There's only a slight difference between us, and that's I also don't believe in this one additional god that you do. That's a little tricky. So you can use it, but I think it's lost a lot of power for me as I've listened to that argument over the years. So that's number two. And then the number three, I'm just going to call it the bad apple, which is used all the time in all kinds of areas, not just belief in God, but all sorts of things. But, you know, this would be pointing out hypocrisy, pointing out how religion has been abused or Christianity has been abused. There's abusers within Christianity. And, you know, there's a certain amount of emotional reckoning that I think that does beg, which is, I think if you do believe in God and you do believe that Jesus is the image that we are all to work towards, to strive to imitate, to emulate and adore, then you want to have full integrity and to take on whatever challenges the character that bad apple argument has. I think that's legitimate. However, that doesn't really mean that it's a effective and good argument against belief in God or existence in God, because the reality is anything and everything that is powerful in meaning in life can be and does get abused. Everything. If it's meaningful, if it carries weight, if it's important, it can be abused. Love can be abused. Family can be abused. Parenthood can be abused. Romantic relationships can be abused. Spouses and marriage itself abused. Relationships, friendships, you know, the loyalty within a friendship. Every single one of these things, whether you believe it or not, they're important, they carry weight, they matter, and they all can be abused. It doesn't call into question the reality or importance of friendship. It doesn't call into question the reality or importance of parenthood or marriage, or anything like that. I mean, this argument is used against all of those entities or relationships or institutions, if you want to call them that. This bad apple argument is used against all of them. And I think if someone's offering that up as a personal point of tension and struggle, I think that's fine. That's quite noble. And of course, like if you've been abused or you've seen too much abuse, it's going to color your understanding and thought about God or about marriage or about church or about anything. That stands perfectly to reason and is perfectly understandable and noble to work towards working through that. But when people use that as a point of attack and a rallying cry to, hey, everybody, come join me the way I think about this. This thing is got to go down. You know, this thing is worthless and meaningless because these bad apples. That's the point at which my hackles are raised. And I think, no, you can't use that as a, you can't weaponize that effectively. Because again, every single meaningful, important thing can be abused. So this is a really short, simple talk, video, lesson, whatever. But it's three arguments that are commonly used. And if you see them and know what they are, you can listen to them, you can take them on, but you don't have to be necessarily knocked over by them. So it's the reduction to absurdity. It is the flying spaghetti monster argument, and it is the bad apple argument. So now you at least have heard those three articulated if you haven't before, and you can kind of look for them and recognize them when you see them. Thanks for your attention. I'll see you next time.